How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. Ray the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Struggling. Don't mean to whine over the air, but this is weird. I've had this before happen to me. I was going to do the program anyway. I think I can make it through the program. I'm having an in-body experience. You know how people have out-of-body experiences? Feel like they're outside their body, looking down. I'm having an in-body experience. I feel like I'm inside myself. Yeah. Looking out through my eyes and hearing things coming in. Hopefully it's going to pass. So let's we can talk. 877-573-7825. See what happens? You can't even speak English when you're having an in-body experience. So let's we can talk. You could say, so let's weekend talk. 877-57 equal acronymically is the number. If you have a question about something in your life, circumstance, situation, perhaps a person, although those are tougher. Those are tougher to figure out than circumstances. I'll tell you that right now. You're a psychologist. You should know why she does that. No, it's because I am a psychologist that I don't know why, and sometimes I don't try to figure out why. The human being is pretty unfathomable. If you'd like to offer a thought, an idea to help someone else, those are good things. And just know that I write down everything you say, and I gather them. I put them in books, and I make money. Can't thank you enough. 877-573-7825. You'll get my producer man, Andrew Krucek. He's there call screaming today, as he also is manning, I think we can say manning, the boards. He is a board operator. I told you, Andrew, why are you a board operator? He says, because you're not very interesting. I said, oh, that explains it. 877-57 equal. Very much would like to hear from you. Question, comment, circumstance. If you disagree with me, you go straight to the front. If you were on any previous program at the end of the show, you also go straight to the front. All the way back. No statute of limitations backward. All the way back to the time this program started, 20 years ago. Yeah, I know. I was the only kid in middle school who had a radio program. I've tried everything with this child. Nothing works. Finally, I got so frustrated. I sent him next door to play, and I moved the family while he was gone. Parents will tell me routinely that their child doesn't respond to discipline. Specifically, it doesn't matter to him. He seems to just take it in stride. Now, that shakes parents up, because they want the child to have some kind of reaction to being held accountable or having a consequence placed on their conduct. They want to see that it's going to at least make the child think or affect the child or have some kind of impact. And parents then develop bad habits. If that didn't work, or at least it looked like it didn't work, then maybe I'll try to find something else. And they pinball parent. Let me give you some of the more common misconceptions regarding he doesn't care what we do when it's time to discipline. The first one is, you do not gauge whether this is having an effect by a child's reaction. That is a very poor indicator. Because some kids are so good at not caring because they care that you care that they don't care. So their apathy is targeted at you. Big deal. Send me to the corner. So what? Big deal. Make me do half an hour's worth of chores. I don't care. I need the exercise. So what? I had a mom once, and I talked about her in one of my early books. She was very frustrated because every time she sent her 5 or 6-year-old, I forget the age, to the corner, she sang. The child sang. And that bothered mom. I called her Dolores. Those of you who understand etymology. It bothered her. I stopped sending her to the corner. Why? Was her singing bad? No. Didn't bother her. Not only didn't it bother her, she seemed happy about it. Well, I just got one question for you, Mom. Did she ever go to the corner on her own? In other words, when you sent her there, she sang. But if you wouldn't send her there, if she just roamed the house, would she say, Mom, I got a little bit of free time here. I'm going to head over to the corner. You mind? Got a couple songs I need to practice. Mom said no. Well, then I said she doesn't want to go to the corner. She's just making the best of a bad situation. And that's a good characteristic. Don't you want that for human beings? Make the best of a bad situation? Another misguiding perception. Perhaps the first 20 times, let's say that a child has a consequence, whatever the consequence might be, it doesn't bother them. All right, so what? But 21 through 40 is well, you know, this corner's getting boring, or my bedroom, laying on my bed, I don't like that, or having to write an essay, this is my 23rd essay, and this is getting old. And then anything over 40 now has an impact. So sometimes it takes numbers for the child to come to the conclusion of, you know, I really don't care for this, and maybe I ought to start altering my behavior so that this doesn't happen. That's one. Another one. If you take away something, and this is, say, for the older kids, you take away a privilege of some type. Doesn't bug them, right? So what? And that's because many children have so much that when you take away a perk or a privilege or some possession, you're just scraping a little bit of icing off the birthday cake. You're not taking any part of the cake. They've got so much other stuff in their lives, so many other options that, okay, so you took my favorite thing. These are a few of my favorite things. Girls in white satin, blue satin sashes, or whatever that song says. Snowflakes that fall on my nose and eyelashes. You took away her favorite thing. She's got 27 other favorite things. So that's big. That's a factor. But here's the most important thing. Your discipline is designed to teach a lesson. Here's the expectation, and this expectation is good for you. That's why you got a parent. Here's the expectation. And here's what I'm going to do. If you choose to just ignore or defy or blow through this expectation. That's what I'm going to do. Now, will that change your behavior? I don't know. It's designed to teach a lesson. If A, then B. Will the behavior change? Ooh, that's a little more unpredictable, especially in the time frame that it would take to change that behavior. It might take longer than you think. But your discipline works the instant you do it. You taught a lesson. And by the way, Tom, don't go away because, yes, that question is fascinating. And there are those cases. So I'll get to you in a moment here. A higher percentage than you think. So when they say, I don't care, or when they look like they don't care, or when that little 5-year-old girl sings herself in the corner, don't worry about it. Your discipline is designed to teach a lesson, to hold somebody accountable, to change their conduct. And eventually, they'll probably learn from it. But you can't care that they don't care, because if you do care that they don't care, then you're going to really get upset, and that's too much caring about their apathy. There you go. Now, I could say I don't care if you call, but I really do care. I like when you call. 877-573-7825 is the number to call. Get onto the program. Appreciate it so very much. This is Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The good news for us, as the Catholics who are trying to understand the world through the lens of Catholic teaching, is that we work for something much more than political victories. There's an ultimate political victory, and that is when the king returns. We shouldn't be irresponsible, but we all know that all those choices are relative to the great moment when the king will return and establish his own administration, you might say. And we should never forget that. Because the coming of Christ will relativize all human kingdoms and all human political efforts. But this is why we should never permit our politics to distort our witness to Jesus.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Ave Maria Radio and the Ave Maria Radio app.
Maybe you've been hearing a lot about the need to make a spiritual communion while participating from home in a live-streamed or broadcast Mass. There's more to it than reciting the act of spiritual communion. We should begin by having sincere repentance for our sins and affirming our belief that Christ's death redeemed us. Next, we call to mind the spiritual gifts found in Christ's sacrifice and thank God earnestly for them. Now we are disposed to pray the traditional prayer of spiritual communion. Jesus, I embrace you and unite myself wholly to you.
Avoiding all known forms of psychobabble. I'm not comfortable with that. I can't go with it. I may hear what you're saying, but I'm not sure I can understand it at every level. This is Dr. Ray. Thanks for joining me. Jimmy Akin has a wonderful podcast called Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. In it, he takes on things that they vary from situations that are puzzling to people, phenomena that are hard to explain, or people have many questions about. It's just a whole fascinating type of podcast. And he had a podcast some time ago regarding near-death experiences. And he reviewed some of the research, some of the information regarding near-death experiences. There are certain commonalities that a lot of people report. But Tom here from Omaha, Nebraska, has a question about these near-death experiences. And that is, are they uniformly positive? Hi, Tom.
Hi. That's my question exactly.
Here's my answer exactly. No, they're not. The percentage reported by Jimmy, who did a review of this stuff, the percentage of highly negative experiences in their near-death reports, 17%.
And then we might assume there's more than that, because you'd be less inclined to be telling everyone about it, I suppose.
And that's exactly what he concluded. Very sharp on your part. That's right. How am I going to tell you I had this absolutely fearful experience of judgment, because that implies something about me, something about my state of my soul. You're absolutely correct. Some people have come back from these supposed experiences so frightened, so shook, that they've converted. They've basically said, "Oh, whoa, 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 whoa!" If there was any legitimate part of that. Now, the interesting thing about these near-death experiences, Tom, you know, and you hear the standard stuff, you know, I saw people that had passed on to greet me, or I saw the Lord, or I saw the light at the end of this tunnel, and I had a peace that was incomprehensible, and I was outside my body, and I looked down, and I saw them trying to resuscitate me. Father Robert Spitzer, in the book called Science at the Doorstep to God, talks about these near-death experiences, and he talks about those that have been really scrutinized from a perspective of how is it possible that that person knew what they reported. I'll give you a small example. There have been people who have had near-death experiences who have been blind from birth. They report seeing something. For example, there was one case where this individual reported seeing a tennis shoe on the roof of the hospital. There was no way you could see that tennis shoe from the roof, from the place, the window where that person was. Plus, the person was blind. They went and checked, and sure enough, it was there. And this person said, I saw it when I was outside of my body. When they were trying to, quote unquote, bring me back, if you will. Now, the debate is, of course, well, were you really dead if you can come back? So, but you're right. There is a certain percentage, it's a smaller percentage, Tom, of people who report very frightening near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I would go to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World and search I don't know if it's probably somewhere, if I recall correctly, is episode number somewhere in the early 200s, I think. He's got 300 and some right now. The early 200s. Mm-hmm. And he delves into this topic and talks about it from the reports. Interestingly enough, this is something that fascinated me. It is not only Christians who have had these kinds of experiences. It is people from other religions, too. So, there you go. Any other questions?
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir. Any other questions, my friend?
We could be on all day.
Well, you got another freebie. Go ahead.
Don't get me started. Don't get me started. No, I have no other questions. Thank you very much.
All right, sir. Will you call back anytime? All righty?
Okay, thank you. Bye now.
Thank you, Tom. Bye. 877-573-7825. Father Spitzer takes a look at some of the research, some of the reports of people who have had not only near-death experiences, but completely inexplicable experiences. Example, one of the most fascinating ones. He reported the case, and this is these are well documented. This isn't, well, my cousin had a buddy that lived in Canada who said he had a friend who said, no. These are confirmed, solid, evidentiary cases. This was the one that most fascinated me. Individual, essentially born without a brain, mostly fluid up there, and was alive. I don't know the details on how this individual was alive or exactly how that worked. But he had really no brain function. None. Zero, zip, nada. You know, IQ at 10. He had an experience where not only did he start to communicate lucidly, but he communicated brilliantly. In other words, and if I remember the details of the report here, they actually gave him an IQ test, and it was very high. And Father Spitzer talked about this, and he said it is a piece of evidence for the existence of the soul that does not need a brain to be there. The soul interacts with the body, but the soul can function or can exist outside the body, like in near-death experiences. It can exist even when there's, of course, brain damage. Of course. This is a fascinating, fascinating thing. And again, these are in his book, Science at the Doorstep to God. Heather from New Jersey. Hi, Heather.
Hey, Dr. Ray. How are you? I'm listening today, and I want to know, what is your perspective on these, you know, non-Christian, non-Catholic near-death experiences? Because I tell you, they really bother me. You know, ones like where the people, like their soul doesn't meet the Lord, doesn't have a sense of the Lord. You know, they sound really New Agey. There's this one particular, I think her name's Anita Moore Johnny, that, like, I just have to say it's from the pits of hell.
I'm
curious to know. Like,
what shakes you up? Heather, what confuses you about those?
How could it be possible that a soul did not immediately receive their personal judgment? As far as I understand, that's Catholic teaching, that, you know, we die and immediately experience our personal judgment. And so if they're in some kind of, like, holding pattern, you know, why aren't they being educated on the risen Lord? You know, why isn't there any sense of Christianity? I definitely can think of this. I categorize it as demonic deception. But I'm very open to hearing your perspective on this.
My first thing, Heather, is that my faith doesn't depend one whit upon the legitimacy of these or not. I'm not going to believe in a heaven simply because there is evidentiary confirmation of near-death experiences. So I'm not going to say, well, for me, that's proof. There it is. There's the proof. No, I don't need that. I hope I don't need that. I don't want to say to God, I need proof of you. So in that sense, I view it as something that seems to be legit in some cases. Not all cases. Who knows? I'm sure there are those who fabricate. I'm sure there are those who hallucinate. But in some cases, it's not to be explained. Now, you said something interesting. You said the Catholic Church teaches that upon death, immediately there is the personal judgment. That's true. But by definition, the people are not dead. Obviously, they came back to life. If they were dead, they couldn't report what experience they may have been having. So that's the first thing. How is it that some of them have these weirdo kinds of near-death experiences, or non-Christian, or face the pits of hell, or some of them report nothing? They just kind of say, no, I didn't have a positive nirvana kind of experience, and I didn't have a frightening experience. It's just I was outside my body, and I was experiencing some very odd things. I felt I was floating above the operating room, and I looked down, and I saw things. I can report what they were doing. So given that, I don't know. I don't know why God allows that to happen in the human body. What is it that he's trying to say? Or is he trying to say anything necessarily, and this is just something that occurs, and we are to take it for what we will? But I wouldn't be shook up by those who have what appears to be odd experiences, because you really don't know the origins of those. I got to find. I want to make a wonderful, where are we at here? Family events. Yes, that's what I want. We have our friends in the upper Midwest. This is their pledge, Real Presence Radio. Will, and Real Presence is a wonderful network. They're going to air their spring live drive starting. They started Tuesday, yesterday. So if you're listening in Minnesota, North or South Dakota, Wyoming, Wisconsin, anywhere, you listen anywhere now. EWTN Catholic Radio, Real Presence, starting their spring drive. So give them some good support, guys. Thank you. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get on to the program. Love to talk to you. This an article by a woman named Jean Twenge. I think she's been on Catholic media before. She says this. This is a long article, but I put out some poll quotes in this. I've been researching generational differences for 25 years. Yeah, there are certain characteristics that come to fit, generally. Cohorts, in other words, generations. People that were born at a certain time experienced certain cultural shifts, movements. She says she's been researching this for 25 years, starting when she was a doctoral student in psychology. Typically, she said, the characteristics that come to define a generation appear gradually. It's a slow kind of thing. You know, you hear the World War II generation and thereafter close as the greatest generation. Because I had to put up with an awful lot of stress, troubles, and I used to listen to my mom and dad describe for me what it was like during World War II. And Teresa, too. Teresa Tomeo, she knew. So she said they come very slowly, they rise slowly, and they do so. She said, millennials, that's under age 35, roughly, are a highly individualistic generation. But she said individualism has been increasing since the baby boomers. She had become accustomed to these trends. Look like modest hills and valleys, you know, they kind of slowly rise and then they taper off. Then she said this. Around 2012, I noticed abrupt shifts in teen behaviors and emotions. The gentle slopes of these characteristic line graphs became steep mountains and sheer cliffs. I've never seen anything like it in all my analyses of generational data, some reaching back to the 1930s. So, what happened in 2012 to cause this radical shift in social behaviors? It was after the Great Recession, which was over in 2009, but it was exactly the moment when the proportion of Americans who owned a smartphone surpassed 50%. She says, the more I pored over yearly surveys of teen attitudes and behavior, the more I talked with young people, the clearer it became that their generation is shaped by the smartphone and by the concomitant rise of social media. And I'll tell you, for me, that is probably, if it's not the top, it's big. It's big. In shaping kids who don't think like the way they were religiously raised. There's more to this. I'll get to it. I'm going to go to Mike from Longview, Washington. He wants to weigh in. We apparently struck a nerve on these out-of-body experiences. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Dr. Ray. Can you hear me okay?
Perfectly.
Good. the reason it did shake a nerve with me, I was actually cleaning my kitchen when your dialogue was going on, and it makes me think of some experiences I had when I was a young child. Because what happened is, now I'm a very, you know, practicing Catholic, pretty faithful to the Catholic Church, I mean, as much as I can be. But growing up in this house, at 3 years old, I was awakened in the middle of a night, and there seemed to be some kind of a presence there. And there was an out-of-the-body experience I had because that presence was able to draw me out and was kind of walking me through the room in order to show me something. The whole experience was, for a three-year-old, for me, was kind of frightening because the person appeared to be a young person from a different time and was dressed as a monk. And I've never known exactly what to make of that experience as a Catholic.
How are you convinced, Mike, that it was absolutely real?
Huh. You know, I've had people ask me that because when you're asleep at night, sometimes, you know, and especially at that age, you might have like a dream or something like that. The reason I'm convinced that it was more real than imaginary is because about 2 or 3 years later, I was taking a break from a cartoon, and I ran down the hall to go use the restroom, and I peered inside a room, and I could see the same person standing there, looking straight back at me, for about a second or so, and it was the same person.
Was it the same person, or was it somehow a little three-year-old's imagination?
Yeah, that's a good question. The second time that I saw what appeared to be this young man was 2 years later. And, just from my memory, when I saw it, it appeared to be the same thing that I had. But,
Well, Mike, I'll tell you what, I'm going to bounce up against the break here. Hold on, I want to just ask a couple of questions after the break. 877-573-7825 is the number to call to get onto the program. We're not doing a particular show, it's not thematic, regarding near-death experiences or out-of-body experience or these very confusing kind of don't-know-what-to-make-of-them phenomena. But apparently we've touched a chord, and some people are weighing in. So we'll pick this up on the other side. Dr. Ray Grandy doing my own stunt voices and discipline. No body doubles here. Pronouncing all big words myself. Verisimilitude. Excoriate. Mellifluence. Good to have you with me. Just talking with Mike before the break from Longview, Washington. He reports when he was three, he had a very interesting experience that he saw a monk-like figure, monk meaning religious monk, walking him about his room. And then, sometime later, when he was still probably in his threes, he experienced this again. He looked into the bathroom and he saw the same figure. And then 2 years later, had that again. Mike, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right. Couple of things to consider. Three-year-olds have very, very patchy recall. Very patchy. For most people, Three is when you actually begin to have snapshots, and that's all they are, snapshots of memories. So that's one thing. That could be a confounding variable, as the shrinks call it, in understanding what happened to you. Second thing, if in fact you were dreaming, which would be the most likely explanation, dreams can be unbelievably real. If you were, then that figure, that monk-like figure, kind of got locked in, and you would be a little more prone to see something like that. Maybe not necessarily hallucinating, but just your imagination seeing it. But here's probably the biggest confounding factor, Mike. It's a fascinating memory study. This professor, I think it was the space shuttle disaster. He had students who came in the next day, and he asked them, where were you when you heard about the space shuttle disaster yesterday? Write it down, please. He collected them all. He got back in touch with these students. I forget what period it was later, 5 years, 10 years later. And the ones he could get to respond, he asked them, do you remember where you were when you first heard about the space shuttle disaster? Oh, yes, yes, absolutely. Never forget it. Seared into my memory. Absolutely. Would you please write down where you were and how sure you are that that's where you were? They did. What do you think the result was, Mike?
Was it a different result?
Absolutely. A high percentage of them said, I know exactly, I'll never forget it. It's locked into my brain. It's a flashbulb memory. It's seared into my consciousness. Here's where I was. And he compared it to their next day reports. And I forget what percentage of them, but it was high. It was high. It was probably 30, 40, 50%. Missed it. So I think what that might say, one possible interpretation of what happened to you, is that as you thought about that experience, as you got older, you thought about it, memory shift. I've had that happen to me personally. I'll say something like, you know, I remember where we were. We went to blah, 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 blah. And then two other people will say, no, we didn't. We didn't go there at all. That was not what happened. And where'd we go? I thought for sure that's where we went because I still remember it. No, no, I'll tell you where it was. You weren't even there. And I realized that you can, it's like painting. You paint over a wall, and you paint over a wall, and you paint over a wall, and pretty soon you remember the memory. And it is subject to fluctuation.
Yeah.
So that's one explanation. I can't say. I don't know, Mike. You know. But the younger you are, generally, the more unreliable the memory.
Yeah.
I'll give you one more. You ready?
Go ahead.
They have supposedly hypnotized people to age regress, going back. And they took them back, let's say, to their fourth birthday party or their fifth birthday party. And they're under this trance reporting. Oh, there's my aunt. There's my aunt wearing that same red dress. She always wore that red dress. And I remember getting a tricycle. It was something. I got a tricycle. Then they went back and checked it. They either had films or they had adults who were there. And the age regression reports were a hodgepodge of bits and pieces of stuff that didn't really reflect what happened. Yeah, fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. So,
well,
but that's interesting.
Just the final thing I would want to say, one thing that makes me uneasy about the supposed experiences, I don't want to lean into something that would go against my Catholic faith. I try really hard to avoid doing that. You know what I mean?
Well, that would be interpreting it. The experience, you could simply say, well, I can't explain that. I can't explain my memory. I don't know. It's kind of an odd thing. But maybe it happened. Who knows? But if you interpret it in a way that goes against your faith, then you could say, I probably shouldn't think that way. That's the difference. And experience itself, especially when it's a confusing one, isn't necessarily anything against your faith. It's when you decide to consciously interpret it.
Okay. Well, that makes me feel a lot better. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, Mike. Okay. Appreciate that. Hey, Andrew, you better mark that, you know, for our Fruit Your Bumpers. I don't get too many somebody saying, that makes me feel a lot better, you know, Andrew. Make a note of that. When we come back, head over to Matt. Head over to Grand Rapids. And if you want to get on real quick, we got another segment, 877-57-EQUAL.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart-friendly, ride-your-bike-everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort-style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
What are sacramentals and how do they differ from the sacraments? The Catholic Catechism says they are sacred signs instituted by the Church. They prepare the faithful to receive the fruit of the sacraments, and they sanctify different circumstances of life. Blessings top the list in importance. Blessings praise God and pray for His gifts and works, and also convey the Church's intercession for the faithful, in order that the faithful may use those gifts according to the will and the spirit of the gospel. In addition, Christian life is nourished by various forms of popular piety. While far less important than the liturgy, these practices and devotions can nevertheless enrich Christian life. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
You're listening to Ave Maria Radio.
Ave Maria Radio.
Unveiling the Covenant is the newest program from Ave Maria Radio.
What is a covenant? It's a vowed exchange of lives which results in an unbreakable family bond. Throughout Scripture, God seeks to espouse all mankind to Himself in an unbreakable covenant bond. His covenantal love is a free gift, but it necessitates a response from us. We are free to accept or reject it. Let's learn what this means as we unveil the covenants.
Saturday mornings at 11 and Sunday morning at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Dr. Ray Grindy, father of 10, 5 boys, 5 estrogen Americans. Oh, don't get upset. Thank you for joining me here. Grand Rapids, Michigan. Matt calling in. Hi, Matt. Welcome, Matt.
Hi, Dr. Ray. How you doing?
I appreciate the call. Thanks.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, basically two things. I'm calling to thank you for helping me out in my training for a 25K run. And then I'd like to talk a little bit about what you've been talking about, giving advice to young adults and how that is referenced to being a sponsor and a godparent. So those are the two things.
Well, how did I help you with the 25K?
Oh, my Lord. Ah, I feel like we're brothers. It's amazing. Okay, I've been doing the 25K here in Grand Rapids, called the Riverbank Run, since 1978. Only missed two. It's 15.2 miles. 21 months ago, I had heart surgery. 7 months ago, I was hit by a garbage truck while I was riding my bike and got 8 ribs broken, was in a trauma unit for 5 days. Anyways, it has been...
You're not blaming me for that, are you?
No, I'm not, but I run 12. I've been running 12 miles to make it through this race, and the first thing I do is put on your podcast. And I tell my wife, honey, I'm going, but Dr. Ray's going to get me through the first 6 miles. He's going to get me. So I have an out-of-body experience, so I don't feel the pain. So So you.
Well, that's not how some people, Matt. That's not how some people would look at it. They would say, I feel the pain listening to you.
Oh, man. No, no. I laugh. I almost fall down laughing, especially your monologues. Seriously, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You got me through the races this Saturday. Maybe I'll call later and tell you how it went. But anyways.
Wow. All right.
Now, to get back to the thing, I've been listening to you talk about when people are calling in, trying to straighten out these young adults, and you're, as far as I'm concerned, you're spot on. They got to want it. But then I got to thinking about if you have been asked to be a sponsor for confirmation to these kids or a godparent. Now, I have three children that I was asked by the parent of the child to be a sponsor for confirmation, and then one parent that asked me to be the godparent. Well, these kids are in their 30s now, approaching 40. One of the things I told them, sat down with them and the parents, way back years ago, 25, I said, are you sure you want me to be your sponsor? Yes. I go, this is a lifelong commitment. I'm telling you, I'm going to be in your face. You know, I'm going to help you out. I got to get yourself in. Oh, yes, yes, yes. It doesn't matter. Well, here we are 27 years later, and, you know, I've been good at my godchild. That's my brother's daughter. It's like, Uncle Matt, you're the only one that keeps bothering me about asking what they talked about in mass the other day. Quit it. But anyways, she has like three kids now. It's all good. But my point is this, and we can go on and on and on and on, and I could go into what I've been doing. But in my observation, Dr. Ray, and I've been through a lot, observed a lot of baptisms and talked to godparents and sponsors, it's been my observation that after that baptism, that is it. You know, I don't think they realize the responsibility, and so I just wanted to put out this challenge to those, and I hope I stirred up some of those godparents and sponsors who were sponsors for confirmation. There's three simple things that I tried, and they work really well that you can do. Number one, contact your godparent or your sponsor and ask if you can meet to celebrate their baptismal date annually. And minimal, if they say no, send them a baptismal card celebrating their baptism. And then secondly, remind them when you try to give them advice, while they're an adult, remind them that, hey, you know, I told you that you gave me permission to do this, and now you're reneging on me, you know, and you got to know my personality to get this. But the last thing is invite them to go to confession with you. Now, that's just, you don't want to call the day of. And that last one is, I think, is really good. Now, just the quick story about the last kid that I was a sponsor for confirmation. I was successful in getting him and his dad to come to confession. I'd meet them to confession at their parish up to about a year and a half ago. After that, they're not communicating with me. And, you know, I'm coming up with some plans to try to connect with them again. But it's not easy. But just it's a huge responsibility as a godparent to help those kids and help their parents, help their kid achieve salvation. So that's mainly what I wanted to put out there, Dr. Ray. I hope that's okay.
Matt, I'll let you have a lot of time. It was worthwhile time because, one, you're right. Baptismal sponsors, confirmation sponsors have very much become social tokenism. Oh, yeah, I got my brother. He hasn't. He's a good guy in the family. Let's get him to be a baptismal sponsor.
Exactly.
That's what's happening. That's the vast majority of them, sadly, I think. However, I like what you said, which is, are you sure you want me to do this because you bought me I like that a lot, and I wish
that's
I would have done
in,
that.
Dr. Ray, that's your way in to be able to, okay, here's what you need to listen, hear me out.
Right.
You have kind of pricked my conscience because I didn't do that, and I've been sponsored for many, and they're grown
not
now.
Not intended.
And one of my sloppiness has been just exactly that, which is not to step up as much as I could have. But I like your thought. So, folks listening,
let me throw this last.
I'm going to have to cut you off, Matt. I'm going to have to cut you off because we're going to end the show. We only got about 20 seconds left. So, good stuff. I appreciate it very, very much. Like Matt said, you get asked, you tell them. You realize what this means. This means you're giving me permission. Permission now. I'll write it down. I'll put it in my lawyer's office. Notarized copy. To periodically talk the faith with you. Especially as you slip and slide. Thanks for joining me. Thanks, Andrew Krucek, for everything you do over there. Appreciate it so very, very much. Always walk with God.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.